Previously on the Adventure Zone.
Yeah, obviously, I guess y'all heard about it. Hornets got attacked. Someone came in the bar, just made a mess of things. We got two in the morgue. And it says they followed whoever did this up into your neck of the woods. One of these hornets had a big, like, chunk missing out of his neck. It's like this blonde lady. I saw her again, but this time, like, she was way different. Parked in formation in front of Amnesty Lodge is a fleet of 20 motorbikes ridden by hornets with Hollis at the lead. So Keith told me everything about the monsters, told me that you all work to fight them and keep it a big secret. Good news. You don't need to know what I'm talking about anymore. You all are relieved of duty. We'll take it from here. I mean, should we just pick it up right where we left off? Because it was kind of a hot scene. I don't know
why we always have to talk a bunch of garbage.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. Like
that, it's called a podcast, Justin.
No, yeah, you're right. Let's get it wet.
Let's get it wet.
Yeah, for
sure.
You
know? Yeah, thank let's you. Get wet and wild.
You all are standing in front of Amnesty Lodge, where you've just sort of come up out of your secret cellar headquarters. Alongside Mama and Barclay, and standing in front of you, actually kind of leaning against a cool motorbike, is Hollis, who is the leader of the Hornets, the local stunt crew turned kind of bike squad, who are sort of in the process of confronting you. There's a little over a dozen of them here parked out in front of Amnesty Lodge, and now you understand their intention, you're kind of able to look them over a little bit better, and they are wielding baseball bats and makeshift sort of rebar clubs and all sorts of blunt weaponry. Kind of a mob. Yeah, a monster hunting mob. Standing in front of you is Hollis, along with Lieutenant Keith, and they have said that they are going to take over monster hunting from this point forward because you all are not getting it done. That's where we're at, and time unfreeze! Zowie!
I've been thinking about this because we have the benefit of, you know, not being in real time.
Oh, time freeze. Hold on. Okay, time freeze.
Yeah, time freeze.
Zap-Zowie.
Now time unfreeze.
Okay.
Unfreeze it.
Okay, it's unfreeze. Zap-Zowie.
Aubrey just kind of laughs like, oh, monsters. Are you kidding me? Ugh. I told Keith. Yeah, listen, he got a bonk on the head when he crashed off his bike. We found him like that. He was in a daze. I think he might have a concussion. You know how that is. You do stunts, right? Concussions have to be a major worry for you guys. He kept going on and on about monsters and stuff. And I don't know. Monsters.
I think Hollis just kind of stares you down and doesn't really say anything. Doesn't seem to be moved by your speech. And then they turn towards Duck and they say, I want to hear it from him.
What exactly do you want to hear me say?
Well, you're carrying a sword. Are you carrying a sword? I don't know if that's something that Duck just kind of rolls around with.
I always assumed it looked like a belt when he wasn't wearing it.
I love that. We've never talked about that before. Your belt sword.
I just always assumed that he looked like a belt.
Okay. Yeah, that works. Okay.
And it's a little bit hot topic.
I think it's exceedingly hot topic. It's a belt with I guess the buckle is a mouth. And that's horny, kind of.
Yeah, it is a little horny.
And it's metal. It was either that or a wallet chain sword.
Hollis says, Well, according to what Keith told me, all of you were there when the I guess, Goatman attacked, which I'm assuming is one of the kind of monsters that seem to besiege our hometown on a daily basis. And so I was just wondering if you were going to outright lie about it, like Aubrey here.
I'm not a monster hunter with any special abilities or anything. I have no physical advantage over anybody else that would be trying to hunt monsters. Look at me for a second. Honestly, if I could, you know, do that sort of thing, wouldn't I be something a little more intense than a forest ranger?
Yeah, that's actually the first believable thing that any of you have said since I showed up here. Ned, you seem to know a lot about monsters. It's kind of your business. It seems like maybe business is a lot better than anybody even expected, huh?
Well, here's what I'm thinking, friend Hollis, that perhaps there's a lot of confusion out there. As you know, I have an extremely successful television show called Saturday Night Dead.
And, yeah, you reference it every episode.
Yes, and as you know, what we do is we not only show great movies. By the way, you may be especially interested this weekend. We have a double feature, Werewolves on Wheels from 1971 with Severin Darden, and 1989's Chopper Chicks in Zombie Town with with Billy Bob Thornton.
You're not going to win me over by
No. I'm just
While Hollis is saying that, like, they have their phone out and are definitely like adding this to their GCal. Yeah.
I would love for you all to come and sit in the studio audience. But be that as it may, we also do a lot of crazy video features, a lot of filmed features that we insert in the show. We've been doing a lot of shooting. We have a young man, looks exactly like Ryan Gosling, with higher aspirations.
Spitting image.
And sometimes we make him up in goat makeup to shoot wild and crazy skits.
Yeah, that was for the we were doing skits. The Krampus thing, right? We were doing like a Krampus
thing. The Krampus
thing.
So we did
like goat legs.
And it's possible that Keith saw that.
We do zany. They're right. We do zany skits. They call us the zoo team, and we're always doing wild stuff.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Well, why don't you let me take this, Duck? And so anyway,
two of my guys were torn to shreds last night.
Yes,
and I saw the
terrible
thing that did it, and it wasn't your handsome friend all dressed up like a goat.
What did you see, Keith?
This is Hollis talking.
What did you see, Hollis?
I think if you actually want something from Hollis, who's like,
I'm sorry, it's so hard with Hollis's deep multi-textured character voice. It's hard to tell the two of them apart.
Listen, I think anybody who doesn't have a rich Appalachian accent is kind of an outlier in this universe that we're crafting.
Fair.
I think Hollis is coming at you. You all kind of like hot and bothered, and I think, well, not hot and bothered. That sounds weird.
Ooh.
Kind of angry. So if you want to get something from Hollis, Duck, you're going to have to roll investigate a mystery.
You know what? I am going to do that.
Okay.
I'm going to do exactly that thing that you just said.
You don't have to. Hollis can just say fuck off, and then you don't have to.
Hey, listen, we do not have a lot in the way of leads, and two of the leads that we did have got eaten. So I don't love our chances right now, so I'm going to take every opportunity that I can get, and I'm going to roll 2d6. God almighty. Hachimachi.
How'd you do, man. Justin?
Well, I got a 4 on that one, Trav, which is what we call in the biz, we call that bad. It's less than ideal.
I think this just
experience.
Yeah. Mark experience, well done.
Experience.
I think this
experience
just ends
failing.
I think this just ends the conversation. I think that Hollis says, you think I'm gonna help you? I told you. The era of you all keeping the whole town in the dark while you sneak around and fail to stop these things from killing people, that era is over. I've got a question actually for you, and I'm only going to ask it once politely. Where are these things coming from? And then it's right then that the front door to Amnesty Lodge sort of swings open, and out walks Agent Stern, who is dressed in full sort of proper FBI agent regalia. And he's actually got his hands like on his hips, pulling his jacket back so everybody can see his badge. He says, everything going okay out here?
Oh, yes. Agent Cern, our friends here were just leaving. They were just setting out. They're on a mission from God. And we say to them, and I mean this most sincerely, Hollis, go for it. Knock yourselves out. Go on your little mission and Godspeed.
With that, I think Keith is now nervous that, a badged official is here and sort of tugs at Hollis's sleeve, who nods and they put their helmet back on, and everybody else in the Hornets sort of follows suit.
Real quick, Keith, before you go, let's hang out sometime, you and I. We've got some catching up to do.
Keith lifts his visor up, and he walks over and he says, "Everyone saw it. I know what we talked about, Aubrey. Everyone saw it. And you can threaten to kill me all you want, but apparently there's other stuff out there that's actually doing it. So, yeah.
he's kidding, Stern. He's kidding.
Hollis and Keith, let me talk to you guys real quick before you head off.
Okay. Hollis comes over and joins
you. I'll, walk out with them. They're leaving. I'll walk out. So here's the thing. This thing is messed up. I mean, whatever it is, it's brutal. And you saw that, and we did too. And I don't know if I should be telling you this or not, but we've dealt with some stuff like this already. And I'm here to tell you that we barely made it out alive. And if you go looking for this thing, it is going to kill you. So this is a move called Trust Me.
Oh, shit.
The mundane can do. And if I tell a normal person the truth in order to protect them from danger, I roll plus charm. On a 10 plus, they'll do what I say, no questions asked. 7 and 9, they do it, but the keeper chooses one from a list, which includes they ask me a hard question, they stall and dither a while, they have a better idea. On a miss, they're going to think I'm crazy and maybe dangerous too.
Oh, this is such a fucking cool move. And it's also something I didn't know was in the game and could totally rewrite shit. All right, let's see
it. Yeah, we're doing it. Classic McElroy.
Yeah, let's see what you got. Another big 4. Okay.
That's a 7 plus 2 charm, which is a 9.
Okay.
Which you get one of those. You can stall and dither, have a, quote, better idea, or ask me a hard question first. So I think that's probably open to interpretation, how you want to interpret this. I definitely had some effect, I think, but I could see where...
Help out and add a point?
I think a mixed success is probably more interesting for Griffin.
Okay. Sense for the scenario, too.
Especially after that hard... after I had a hard failure, it seems like a mixed success.
Yeah,
seems
for sure.
Right.
I like this. Okay, so I'm going to go with ask you a hard question first, and it's going to be in this form. It's going to be... Hollis lifts up their visor, and they stare you down, Duck, and they say, "I don't think you're lying about that either, Duck, but if you really want us to not help protect the town like you've been doing for God knows how long, then we need to know the truth, and we need to know all of it. When you're ready to do that, just flag down a hornet. We're going to be... all over town on patrol, so I'll see you hopefully when I see you." And they lower their visor down, and the Hornets depart. Basically saying, if you tell them literally everything that you know about the Pine Guard, and no, clever ruses, actually what is going on here, everything you know, then they will disband their monster hunting force as it is now. That's the trade-off.
Okay, so I go back inside and I flag down Aubrey and Ned, and I sort of update them on the scenario. So that's basically it. They'll keep their heads out of it if we tell them everything.
Well, I have to say, there's a part of me that doesn't mind the idea of this neighborhood watch beefing up our numbers kind of deal, eyes on the street, but at the same time, I don't know their methods, and they seem pretty hell-bent for leather as far as violence goes, and we got a lot of not bad monster types, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. I have an idea that might lend itself to that situation. Kirby! Kirby, wait, come here a moment.
Why is Kirby? I guess you did take a move where he is your constant companion. He a fucking closet in the cellar of the
There's a poof of smoke and Kirby appears.
A closet door in the cellar under Amnesty Lodge swings open.
Like it bursts open.
All right, I won't do it that way. Back up. Let me try a different way. I have an idea. Why don't I send Kirby out in the Cryptonomica van with the camera drones from episode 6 to keep an eye, on our friends, the bumblebees, and he can report back to us and see what they do.
There's so much wrong stuff in that scene.
There's a few wrong things. Let me see. Let me try to go in order. First one is your man Kirby might just have to watch a gang member get eaten alive, because I don't think this thing is like luring friends back to its place and stealing their identity, and then over several months, it's just eating people.
Although, well, can we agree that identity thieves are the real monsters?
Yeah, I mean, like, I'm no great fan of identity thieves, but, like,
You wanted to know about their methods. You said
I don't know. I didn't say anything of the sort. What I said was we need to decide if we want to tell them everything or if we want to let them take their chances.
I'm already in enough deep shit with Mama and Squatch Boy about running my mouth, so I vote we don't tell them shit. We keep an eye on them, and if they get in trouble, we go help them.
Yeah, there's a part of me that feels like if we can tell them now about, you know, tell them everything, we can keep them out of this specific thing, but there, it's like the genie's out of the proverbial bottle. Fuck, there might be genies. What do I know?
There probably are genies.
Now that I think about it.
Here's my thing, is I also know that, man, how many times do you watch a movie or TV show or something and just scream, like, just tell them. Like, listen, here in Kepler, people are in danger all the time. And I'm starting to wonder if maybe we're doing a disservice by not telling them what's out there.
If you start telling them stuff, then you have to, where do you stop?
Yeah.
Do you tell them about Sylvain?
Yeah.
Do you tell them about
Ned? I agree.
Is Berkeley and Mama down in the cellar with you all? They were definitely
they popped down now, and we catch them all up.
I mean, they were definitely at the scene while you guys were sort of having this confrontation with
them. Yeah, I think it would be easier because I would like to ask Mama how she has. Yeah, how have you dealt with stuff like this in the past, Mama?
I think Mama has been pretty just like shocked into silence since hearing that this large squadron of armed bikers knows that there's monsters in Kepler and seeks to do something about it. And she says, y'all, there ain't never been a situation like this before. And for once, Ned, it seems like I can't blame this one on you.
There's got to be some way to blame it on Ned. Don't give up, Mama.
She says, we've been trying to keep the peace discreetly for decades now, and it's been working. And listen, I'm about to get forced into retirement, and I've made peace with that, but I can't feel comfortable about the idea of leaving just like a handful of y'all to, you know, fight against deadly supernatural threats every 2 months or so. And if they have the opportunity to add some more, you know, muscle behind your efforts, I don't see why not. And while she's saying that, I think this is when Barclay just like reaches up and takes off his bracelet and sets it down on the table, 12 Angry Men style. And Barclay says, in case you all forgot, I'm Bigfoot. So if these guys
go, wait, a name drop.
I'm friends with Dracula, so he says,
I'm kind of a big deal. I'm in Hotel Transylvania.
It's not a, yeah, don't worry about it. He says, this is an armed gang of passionate monster slayers. What do you think happens if they come up into Amnesty Lodge and figures out sort of our whole situation here? Do you think that they're going to be as patient as you guys are?
But that's my point, is if we have a chance to say this is what's up before that happens, I mean, what do you think is the better option? We don't tell them, and one of them, like, accidentally catches sight of somebody changing, you know, their watch and turns into, you know, another goat man or whatever, and they get attacked while they're just, you know, getting ready for a swim. Is that really better than us telling them ahead of time, like, some people are good and some people are bad, just like in on Earth with humans?
I feel like I've known some of these rowdy boys their entire lives, and we can tell them it's too dangerous, but if we let them know that there are literally monsters in the town, there's nothing that's going to dissuade them from, you know, continuing to search them out and probably getting themselves killed. Honestly, I mean, they say that I think what we're really talking about here, y'all, is do we save them from this one, or do we, you know, save them from all the future ones? Because I feel like if we can stave them off of this one, but they're going to be back in full force next time.
I don't see why we need to keep debating. If they find out about the gate to Sylvain, that's it. That's war. That's the war.
We have a resource here that we're not using.
Which is?
Jake Kulice. He knows them. He was with them. He can give us insight. I think we need to bring him into this discussion. Because, you know, for all we know, forgiven that scene, which we have to remember, it wasn't too long ago that two of their friends got mangled by a monster while they all watched. I think it's understandable that they're a little on edge. We might be able to get some insight from Jake about this whole scenario.
All right, listen. We burned plenty of daylight debating this. I'll talk to Jake and see, you know, if I can get him to try and make peace, I guess, with the Hornets, try and impress upon them the reality of our situation without sort of cluing them into everything, Barclay. But we need to get out there because this, whatever's out there killing folks right now ain't going to wait for us to, you know, have a summit with the you know, the local biker, toughs. So, I think let's get out there right now before nighttime rolls up and see what we can find out.
I think at this point, if I may, Duck and Ned, it kind of feels like we have, let me check my notes, and she mimes opening a notebook. Yeah, we don't know anything, so maybe we should split up and just kind of see what we can find out by asking around?
Well, let's not split up, but let's do ask around. I like the part where we ask around, for sure.
Yeah, and I miss you guys.
Yeah, I miss you when we're not together. And honestly, can I be straight with you guys? I'm just a dude.
Oh,
so
that's right. Okay. Well,
I would rather stay with the people with superpowers if it's like all okay by y'all.
Well, that's just, you're just talking about Aubrey. She's the only one. I guess Barclay's
too. Okay. I didn't want to be shitty
Ned
about
has
it,
a
but
gun.
Yeah.
Ned has
Ned's
a gun.
Got a cool gun and a lot of lying power.
Yeah. And a car. Which
he used to have a car.
He did get another car.
He got a crepe wagon.
He did get a crepe wagon. Yeah,
crap wagon. Crap wagon.
Crap wagon.
I'm not doing it again.
Crap wagon.
Okay, well, before we go out and look, I need to go use the restroom because I haven't in like 45 episodes.
And all their characters realize they haven't shit in a year. They all go to shit.
Hey, a couple quick announcements, too, before we get back to the episode. We've got a bunch of cool stuff over at macromerch.com. If you haven't checked it out, you need to go do that. 10% of all merch proceeds this month will be donated to Border Angels. Macromerch.com, check that out. Also, Griffin's book, The Stowaway, is out now. It's a choose-your-own-adventure. Go to bit.ly/GriffinStowaway and get all the information there or find it at a local bookstore.
Thank you, Travis.
You're welcome, Griffin. And Justin's great, too. He does cool things.
Whatever.
All right. Back to the show.
I want to thank everybody who's been tweeting about the show using the Zonecast hashtag. We really appreciate you spreading the word. If you do it, you might end up as a character in the show. I know we've been kind of slow to roll those out, but you could end up like Keith, who's named for Keith Wellman on Twitter, or like, Agent Stern, named for Joseph Stern on Twitter, and a few others. So yeah, I know it's slim pickings, but I really appreciate you spreading the word about the show. It's how we've gotten to have the cool audience and community that we have now. And yeah, I just appreciate you. And hey, I appreciate you if you'd listen to Maximum Fun and the other shows that we have on the network here. Got a bunch of new ones, like the Jackie and Lori show, and like Amy Mann and Ted Leo's new show, The Art of Process, and a bunch more, all at MaximumFun.org. We have a website that's McElroy.family if you want to check out the other stuff we do. I think that's going to do it. So, hey, we'll be back in 2 weeks, and the day that that is going to be today's date, the number of it, plus 14, which is February 21st. I definitely didn't have to look at a calendar to figure that out. So we'll talk to you then. Bye.
We hear a flush and a hand wash. And okay. Like footsteps coming back down the stairs.
Sure.
I'm ready to go.
Fantastic. I don't really, so like, it's kind of up to y'all how you want to do this in investigation. I think that this is more sort of how Monster of the Week is designed to be played, which is maybe not the most sort of show sort of friendly process, but I think it'd be interesting to just like let y'all loose in Kepler, which is a lot easier now because we have this map in Roll 20 and we have sort of, you know, an ongoing list of you know, leads and stuff like that. So it's up to y'all. We can just, you know, do scenes as you want to do them, and you tell me what you want to look into, because as you have said, you don't know jack about this thing.
Well, it seems to me like, even though we don't know anything, over the last couple episodes, we have made some contacts.
Yes.
I mean, like, there's Indrid.
Indrid's gone.
I will say, from Aubrey's point of view, the things that she learned from like investigating the scene makes her want to talk to Danny, but I don't know that that's something she'd want to do in front of everyone.
We can do that. You just go talk to Danny alone. I know we wanted to do scenes together, but like, if that's how you want to talk to Danny, that's how you want to talk to Danny. On the subject of Indrid, we might want to clear this up. The last time you guys saw Indrid, Duck punched Indrid in the face and I knocked his glasses off. And then Indrid flew away as the Mothman. And you actually haven't seen Indrid since. That was a couple months ago during the last hunt. So Indrid is not super available as a resource right now.
I think we need to investigate why this happened. I think we need to investigate. I mean, we're not getting anywhere necessarily with the creature. But I think we need to figure out why. Why that particular place? Why the hornet's nest? What led to that? I think that's the angle we need to pursue, because there's obviously we said it ourselves that this was a targeted attack that happened at the hornet's nest. I assume there's still some injured hornets in like the hospital and stuff.
I don't know about that. There's definitely some in the morgue still. Like,
well, let's get it clarified. Were there survivors?
There were. I think that they have mostly been discharged at this point.
It'd be nice and creepy. We haven't it been to a morgue. Yeah. We haven't been to a morgue since two arcs ago.
Let's go to the morgue. I'd love to see how we're going to get into the morgue.
Let's go to the morgue zone.
So wait, do we want to do, Aubrey, you go talk to Danny and Ned and Duck to the morgue?
If I may have a vote, I say let him go talk to Danny. We'll take care of something else, and then I think we all ought to go to the morgue. Is that all right with you, Juice?
Yep.
Okay, let's do this conversation with Danny. When you're trying to find like a time to talk to her where she is not sort of around anybody else, and you get a great opportunity to do so because I think just like later that day that the Hornets showed up, you find Danny. And she is just kind of walking around in the clearing in the woods where the archway is. And she's actually like got a hand up on it. And she is just kind of like standing there with her eyes closed. And in fact, I don't think she notices when you sort of walk up.
And of course, Aubrey's out taking Dr. Bonkers out for a walk.
Okay. That's the first time I've ever heard you leave off one of his names.
Oh, sorry. Dr. Harris Bonkers. Thank you, Griffin.
PhD? It's been so long.
Yeah, Dr. Harris Bonkers, PhD.
Okay.
You know how you take rabbits for walks?
Yeah, sure.
Or for hops? And she... hey, Danny. Ahem. Ahem.
Danny is not startled, I think, by your approach, and she turns around and looks at you, and she looks, she does not look sort of the usual sort of chill, you're not getting those usual chill vibes that you get from Danny when she's just kind of kicking it around Amnesty Lodge. She is definitely upset about something, and she says, hey, Aubrey, sorry, what's up?
Well, I need to talk to you, but first, is everything okay?
Not really. I mean, I guess I'm homesick a little bit. I've still got family over in Sylvain that, you know, I'm not allowed to go over and see. And it's, you know, I'm grateful for Mama putting us up and giving us a safe place to stay. But it's, you know, it's hard. I miss him a lot.
I totally understand, and we can talk, let's make plans to hang out later and unpack that, and I want to be here for you, but I need to talk to you, and it's incredibly urgent.
She's actually distracted as you're saying this, like she actually kind of turns away from you and is looking back at the gate, and I don't even think she responds to what you're saying. She's very, very sort of engrossed.
Danny, you might be in some serious shit. Very shortly, there was an attack at the Hornet's Nest where that biker gang hangs out, and the attacker, the description is very much like you, and I know it's not you because you wouldn't do it, and I'm not saying it was you. I'm saying I need you to tell me where you were, and if you are there any other, you know, Sylvanians around, like you, blonde women?
This is definitely investigate.
Okay. All right.
Let's keep the streak alive. Those big boy rolls.
Who?
What's your sharp, though? It's a six. Travis has rolled a six. What's the sharp?
Plus one. That does make it a mixed success.
All right. On a mixed success for investigate, you hold one. So you get to ask one question. You're asking where she was. You're trying to get an alibi, right? So it's not.
Yeah.
I guess this could be investigative mystery if you are trying to weed out that she is not the monster, right? So I guess the rules still apply here. I'm willing to let just, you know, where were you last night be the question here.
Okay.
I think that makes
sense.
Cool.
Then let's go with that.
She says, I don't remember, Aubrey. I cannot remember where I was last night because I wasn't sort of aware of it. I and now that her breath is like quickening, you can tell she's getting kind of scared. She says, I was taking a walk down toward Mount Kepler. Next thing I know, it's morning, and I wake up here in front of the arch, and I was holding this, and she's got this little satchel with her, and she opens it up and reaches inside, and she pulls out this sort of dark blue book that is the cover of which is sort of heavily damaged, and the it's this hard leather bound cover that is etched with these arcane symbols that, like, I think you know enough about magic and stuff from your lessons to know that they are magic symbols, but you definitely you can't really tell what it says. She says, so that was my morning. How was yours?
Well, we got threatened by a biker gang. And I got outed as using magic and fighting monsters. So also not great. Now that you mention it. Cool. So, I, on my end, am going to figure out what happened. And make sure you don't get in trouble and do everything in my power, which is a lot because I can do magic and throw fire and stuff, to make everything okay.
I need you to just kind of lay low. And for fuck's sake, if you see a biker, run.
Danny smiles when you say that. I think she appreciates the concern. And she says, I'm not scared of them, Aubrey. I'm not afraid of what they'll do to me. I'm scared of what they might find out. I'm scared of war between our worlds. And frankly, I'm scared of this. And she points at the book. She says, I'm going to hide out, of course. I'm going to lay low. But I need you to get out there and find out what this is.
Griffin, real quick, I would like to read a bad situation.
Oh, okay.
In regards to the book.
All right.
Let me... Okay, cool. A 10.
All right.
So, one, I want to ask, are there any dangers we haven't noticed? And I want to couple that with my third eye. I have the third eye that lets me, you know, kind of examine magical shit.
Yeah.
Or look for magic.
Okay.
So I want to kind of do those simultaneously with the book.
Okay. It pops off. As you sort
I'm expecting
like,
some like Tom Riddle shit.
Oh no, nothing quite that sort of inherently obviously evil. You open up the book and just kind of like thumb through it quickly and you know, clap on your third eye, which also reads, and it makes like a gross noise as it moves back and forth to read. Is it a physical eye?
No.
Okay.
No, it's not a physical eye.
Anything's possible.
I mean, that's true. Duck is wearing a sword belt.
Yeah.
So.
It is, I think the in terms of it being a danger, I think the thing that you pick up on is there are incredibly powerful magic spells in this book. It is a guidebook for how to cast extremely advanced, extremely potent magic. And I think that that's how you could interpret it as a danger. I think with your third eye, like you're able to tell that there's like one passage here that is sort of the most complicated and most powerful spell of them all. And you can, again, like you can't make out what the symbols say just because like you're not that advanced in it yet. But there is sort of an image, and the image you can clearly tell is sort of a crude drawing of a mountain. And there appears to be, there's something coming out of the mountain. There's like a smoke or fog or something coming out of the mountain. Not necessarily like a volcano, but just like it's emitting this this smoke in all directions. That is what you pick up on.
And I want to use one more of the hold three. And that's just while I still have that old third eye open.
Sure.
What's the best way to protect the victims? I want to just kind of like, look over Danny and see if there's any like weird aura or weird energy or any kind of thing like that. Am I seeing around her? And I'm worried that she was like possessed or something.
Oh, I see. There is, you're picking up on traces of some sort of energy thing. Like that's about as like specific as you can pick up on.
So there definitely was something there, but it doesn't appear to still be present.
I don't know if you can tell the latter thing, but there definitely was something there.
Okay.
Let's call the scene there and get to the morgue. Okay.
And just real quick, I did tell Duck and Ned about the book, but I said I found it by the gate whilst taking Dr. Harris Bonger's PhD on a walk.
Love it, love it, loving it. Okay, so the morgue, huh? The morgue is sort of in a... building adjacent to the sheriff's department, not so like close to the front door that like you're gonna walk in front of Sheriff Owens directly as you try to get into the morgue, which I think you were right in your assumption that it may be kind of tricky to get in there. This is obviously not a super big town, so the morgue is a fairly small and humble building. There is a sort of entry chamber as you walk inside with a big heavy door towards the back that is where sort of the morgue business is taken care of, and then there's a small just like IKEA desk in front of it with some notes and stuff on it. And as you walk in, there is a man sitting at that desk, and he is wearing a white lab coat, and he is just sort of reading some stuff on his desk. He actually has a brochure out for the Green Bank Telescope, and he is reading it sort of with. I mean, he just doesn't even notice that you guys come in as he is reading this brochure, and you all are in the morgue.
We walk past him. That's what I thought you were implying. You're in.
No, the door is big, and the door into the morgue is big, and it has actually, you see a key card lock next to it.
Mm. Well, I got us this far.
What did you do?
Well,
what
I had the idea. Did you drive us? I did drive us. By the way, we stopped the Kryptonomica so I could get the Kryptonomica van.
There he goes.
And pick up something else.
Well. Okay, that's ominous. I'm very scared of what that could be. At this point, now that you all have walked into the morgue and remained silent for 8 straight minutes, the morgue technician looks up at you and he says, can I help y'all with something?
Well, we would like to see the bodies of
my brother,
my dad,
my son,
his brother, his son, her brother, my dad.
Not related. There's 2 of them.
But you had to figure out which 2.
We need to see a body for a dare. I'm sorry about all the lies from before, but we need to see a body for a dare.
I was there to look at the body of my brother.
And my son.
I was there to look at the body of his son, who is also my brother.
Everybody
because he
can't
is my
be,
father.
Everybody's bit can't be that they're bad at lying. I put my, like, I stake my claim in that.
I thought mine was a good lie of like, I'm here to identify my brother. I'm here with an officer of some kind. And this is my elderly caretaker who watches over me because our parents are deceased. It was going to be a good lie. And then Ned had to throw it. And you, my father, my son or whatever. Ugh.
Griffin, what is, I assume he has a name tag on, right? An official name tag?
He does. It says,
what
careful,
is it?
Don't force Griffin to create a character. If he's not ready to do it, he'll get very snippy.
Just a name.
Gregor.
See?
Gregor. Gregor. Very distinctive name.
No, Gregor.
Okay, I remember on the internet, there is a, one of the handles is Gregor Mortis. Aren't you a fan of Saturday Night Dead?
God damn, Dad. Gregor Mortis is a great user.
It's such
handle
a yeah, it's good fucking pull, good. Dad. What is the move, Griffin, where you not just try to investigate someone or manipulate them, but try to impose a reality?
No, this is fucking great. Let's do it. Shape this shit, man. I love it. You're on some it's some Infinity War shit. You just snapped and Gregor existed. So this is net friends is your role here. Oh,
11. Wow.
That's 11. An 11 plus charm.
Plus charm, which is plus 1. So that's a 12.
Okay. Gregor Mortis looks up at you. And I think it actually takes them a second to actually kind of figure out what you're talking about. And then Gregor says, Oh my God! I'm sorry. I didn't realize that it was you, Ned. So wait, you need to get in there and see bodies.
Well, we're doing a little research for an upcoming episode, the Night of the Living Dead, and we wanted to look at a not living dead person. So if you could spare us just a few moments in there while we do a little research for Saturday Night Dead.
I'm Gregor? Supposed to build some, like, you know, mannequin, you know, bodies for the set. And so I just need reference just to see. I've never seen a dead body before, you know?
And none of us have the internet.
Well,
I don't want that on my search history. Are you kidding me?
Thank you.
What if my parents that's saw? Good.
Yeah, I can let you in. I really don't want Sheriff Owens to find out about this.
No.
We don't
believe
either.
Me. He's not a friend of the show.
No, I listen, there's not a back door out of there for y'all to sneak through. It's really just this one. So be quick I guess. And yeah, this is a weird request, Ned, but anything for the webmaster.
Wait. I have one of these enameled pins.
Where are you pulling it from?
My face.
No. It's of your face. You weren't
you
pulling
didn't
it from
your face.
You just
rip a pin out of
true,
your
yes. An enamel pin of my face.
I okay. misunderstood.
But, yeah. And this, my friend Gregor, is for you.
Now, who would be so vain as to make an enamel pin of their own face?
Yeah, unbelievable. Gregor lights up and pushes it through his badge, which takes some effort, but with his super strength, he does it. And then he walks over and swipes his badge across the keypad, and he says, "Seriously, like maybe 5 minutes, and then." Let's get you out of here.
You got it.
Okay. You all walk into the morgue room, and in an effort to kind of keep you concealed, he shuts the door behind you. So there are two bodies covered in sheets on sort of two metal racks, one of which has been clearly sort of worked on recently. There are a few... what are those things that, like, you can slide bodies in and out of in morgues, in TV shows and movies?
Slabs.
The slabs. Yeah, that's probably the best name for it. There's definitely a few of those in the room also. Like Gregor explained this, there's no other sort of entry or exit from the room. And that's where you are.
Aubrey spooks Duck. Bah! Did it work? Did I get him?
This is all profoundly disturbing. Let's just try to keep some sense of decorum in here, eh? Okay, I'm going to pull back one of the sheets.
Okay.
At random.
You pull back one of the sheets, and underneath it is a dead guy. and I think just like you were told by Detective Megan back at the Hornet's Nest, It's a grisly thing that's happened to them. There are bite marks, not really bite marks, right? Like it doesn't appear to be like in, you know, a vampire movie where there's two sort of cute little discreet fang marks. Like it's a bite mark, like a more akin to like a small shark got in there. Yeah, I think that's all. That's what is obviously apparent about this thing. This former human Keplerian without rolling.
So should we say a few words?
I don't think people who sneak into morgues have been called on to. I don't think so.
But that feels like I don't want to start.
Here are a few words. Gross.
Yeah.
Look, gnarly.
But it's still a person.
Look at that stitch work on the. Why do they open them up like that?
Look at this. This poor bastard's been taken back to Chicago.
Yeah. Oh no, he's bought an apartment there. Yeah. Like long lease. Hey Ned, are you grossed out by like the wounds or by the shoddy work of the Undertaker or whatever the fuck?
Whatever you're trying to establish.
Well, no, but that, look how. I'm sorry. As an artist, I find this very disturbing.
Okay, you sound like a serial killer. Griffin, I would like to look at the wounds, I guess.
Okay. I mean, this just investigate a mystery, I think. Yeah. If you're wanting to.
Is that plus sharp?
Yes.
So that's a 7. It was a 6 plus 1.
Okay. So you get to ask one question from the list.
What happened here?
I'm trying to think of how to give you sort of more details than what you got just from eyewitnesses. Looking at this thing, how about this? There's definitely like on this rack, there is a clipboard hanging from it with a coroner's report. And I think between just sort of looking at the victim and looking at the coroner's report, you can tell that they did die from blood loss, but there's nothing mentioned in the report about like there's no blood. There's nothing
like
in the report
drained,
about it. They weren't
like one might
yeah.
be afraid of with a vampire.
They weren't made into a Capri Sun. They were just maimed in sort of the gnarliest way possible. It seems like
doesn't it? Let me ask you fellas a question. doesn't this seem almost calculated to be scary? Like, you'd think if it was a monster trying to feed, right, that they had time to attack multiple, like, more than just two and then walk away. Like, this is a lot of attack. Like, one of these wounds would probably have killed this guy.
Yeah. It seems like overkill.
It doesn't just seem like a rampage because they stopped and left.
There's got to be a reason why this attack happened.
You know, in the past, when we've seen, like, these attacks, it seemed almost like, you know, if you let a bear loose somewhere, you know what I mean? But this was this isn't like the kind of attacks we saw with, like, the water thing or the, like, abomination thing.
All right, hear me out. I have a wild and crazy idea. You know the item I stopped at Cryptonomicon and picked up?
Yeah. This is going to be so good.
Okay, you, Duck, are basically wearing a magic belt, a magic weapon belt.
Yeah.
Aubrey is seething with magic, correct?
Ew,
Aubrey,
gross,
seething?
Yes.
And in under my jacket, I've got a gun with a fucking magic crystal in
sure.
it, right?
Okay, with magic artifacts. Magic is real.
So we got magic all over the place.
Oh, magic for days.
I picked up an item at the Cryptonomicon mm-hmm. that I stole from Teresa Caputo's house. That I think, ooh. Teresa Caputo, she's the Long Island medium.
Okay.
With all of this magic and all of this power, and I pull out an Ouija board.
Okay.
Why don't we ask the dead guys?
I tell you what would be fun. I'll tell you what would be fun is if I make Ned do a use magic roll. If I make Ned do a use magic roll to do this thing that he has suggested. And that's not to say that if you roll a fucking 14 like you do sometimes, Clint McElroy, that I will then make one of the bodies sit up and then start tap dancing. But if you want anything to come out of this, I feel like you're going to have to roll to use magic.
Okay. I'm willing to try it.
I'm willing to try it, too, because we're having fun.
I'm definitely willing to watch him try it.
Yeah, I'm willing to stand 10 feet away. And
now, remember how a Ouija board works. No. Everybody has to put their fingers on the plinth, and it spells stuff out. Nobody's going to sit up.
And there's not a table to do. There's not like a service.
We just set it on top of the guy.
Yeah, you just put it on the other guy who's still covered up.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, wait. I just want to clarify the sequence of events. We came to the morgue to look for clues.
On a field trip.
To look for clues. We pulled back the sheet of one person, looked at it, and it was like, well, confirm, folks. The facts are here. This body's done been fucked up. And then my pretend dad in the game pulls out a Ouija board and is like, I'll contact him. And I'm like, but there's a whole other body. You don't want to look real quick? Hey, I said I brought a Ouija board.
What part of I brought a Ouija
what
board?
What part of I brought a Ouija board? But it doesn't, do we have to be in close proximity to, I've got a magic gun. I know.
I've got a magnifying glass and I've got a microscope and I've got a Ouija board.
All right. Let's get this used magic roll.
I think we should put this to a vote. For all
it's
the
no.
listeners, they get to say
it's our first ever call-in poll.
It should be one of those like two different 800 numbers, except make them 900 numbers so we profit something.
All right, so Dad, roll a six. Now
what's plus, it? Now Dad rolled a six plus weird,
which is a zero.
So that's a failure. On use magic, which means like
six. Six is a failure.
Yeah,
yeah.
Man,
we've been playing this game for
a long time. Yeah. Here is what happens. You all are doing this pseudo seance on top of this the other body that is.
Spirits in attendance, those of you who have crossed over to the other side, speak. Speak to your humble servants, please. I beg of thee.
As you are doing that, I think you are sort of getting a little bit too into it. and you push down too hard on the board, trying to get some sort of response, and it just sort of falls and clatters to the ground. And as it does so, you now can see under where the board was, there is some blood sort of soaking into the sheet.
Wait, pull the sheet back?
As you pull the sheet back, you can now see the individual underneath it. It is a man who is sort of similarly torn up in the way that the other body was. However, this is a fresh one, and you can tell just, you know, by visually comparing the two. And I think you're like so sort of struck by the again, like grievousness of these wounds, that you it actually takes you a little bit longer to look at the face of this person. And when you do, you see the face of Gregor, the technician you were talking to outside. And as you notice that, the door into the morgue starts to swing open.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.
Hi, I'm Biv.
And I'm Teresa.
And we host When Bev Mother, a comedy podcast about parenting.
Whether you are a parent or just know kids exist in the world, join us each week as we honestly share what it's like to be a parent.
I'm just going to end with this. Everybody, you're doing a remarkable job of swimming through the shit show that is parenting.
So join us each week as we judge less, laugh more, and remind you that you are doing a great job.
Find us on MaximumFun.org, on Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Not all heroes wear capes. Some heroes watch war movies and then review them.
Friendly Fire is a war movie podcast for people who don't necessarily like war movies, although it does not exclude people who love war movies.
I'll have you know that I am wearing a cape. My cape is just made of sound-deadening material from an audio recording studio.
It's a really great show. John's daughter doesn't like it because we sometimes say swear words on it, but almost everybody else that has ever listened to it has enjoyed the program.
Download and subscribe to Friendly Fire wherever you get your podcasts.
To the victor, go the spoiler alerts.